Well, fall is a big time of transition, and our homes need some help to get ready for colder weather, just like you and I do. It can really be hard sometimes to know what to do with your home and how to maybe prioritize those different jobs. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Lucky to have with us today Kent Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison to talk about getting your house ready for winter and sort of into the fall season, and certainly talk about some of the kinds of issues, maintenance issues that we have at this time of the year. He's got a whole checklist of things we can talk about. And, of course, you can join in with your own questions or comments at 800-642-1234, Facebook at The Larry Mueller Show, or email at talk@wpr.org. And Ken, good to see you again.
It's always great to see you, Larry.
We have, this time of the year, there's always a lot of things to consider, especially, let's zero in a little bit on the outside of the house today.
On a beautiful day like today, it's the last thing that you want to think about is getting your house ready for winter. But it's a great time to start thinking about what sort of things should be done to protect your house over the winter, to keep, to stay on top of things. We look at, you can take a look at your sidewalk and the ground around the house to see if it's leaning towards the house or leaning away from the house. If it's leaning towards, water from rainstorms and snow could lean up against the house and cause water in the basement. We look at caulking around the windows. It's a good time to try all your windows, make sure they work, make sure the storms are functioning. Yeah, all these little things that you can do. You look at the siding and see if there's cracks in it, see if there's separations, and you could just address it. What I recommend to people is that they take an afternoon and just walk around their house and walk around, look at the lower part of the house, maybe from the knees down, and take notes on everything that you see that might be a yellow flag, like I say, a crack in the foundation or a sidewalk that's heaved and is leaning towards the house. Make a note of it, take a photograph of it, and then walk around a second time and look at everything from your knees to your to as high as you could reach, and just look at everything, the windows, the top of the windows. Very common in older homes are for the trim around the top of the windows to allow moisture and water to come in behind them, because they've rotted over the years and they just keep getting worse. And if you see that, you could, you may need to take care of it now, or you may be able to put it off for a year or two, or at least until spring, but at least you know what you've got. Mm-hmm. And it's always good to know what you have to deal with. And as long as you doesn't keep you up at night, especially on beautiful weather like we're having here in late summer.
You know, we have a gutter. We had to get downspouts and gutters. One thing, we have a gutter on our two car garage, and on the right side, it's almost, because it's right up to the neighbor's lot line, we don't really see it. And neighbors invited us over for dinner one night, and I'm sitting on the porch, and I look over at the gutter, and there are little trees growing out of the gutter.
Yeah, you've got your own nursery. Maybe you could sell them, to a nursery.
So actually this weekend, I think I'm going to be taking the ladder and going over to the neighbor's yard and get that out of there.
Well, your daughter's 10 years old now.
Yeah, she's 10.
When she's about 12, she's probably old enough to do that.
But that's another thing to check, of course, downspouts and gutters.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I want to let people, or two things I want to say about that, gutters, is you want to be very careful, especially if you're climbing ladders to get to them. There's folks like me of a certain age that think we're a little more physically adept than we may be. We just want to be careful how we set the ladders in place, how we climb up. If you reach in gutters and pull out the old, the compost, it's basically compost up there. You want to wear gloves, because there's a lot of screws. When they put it up, you can rip your skin open, and it's just no fun to do that. So, but there's just like I said before, you walk around the house, you just keep looking up, and each time you go around and make notes, take photos. You can get a set of binoculars and throw it on the house and look at your roof. You want to look for things like shingles that are bubbling up or cupping up, or or if you see a lot of granules, the shingles, the granules that are in the shingles laying around on the ground or coming out of your gutter, you know that it might be worth taking a look, a closer look at the roof.
We have just back to the gutters for a minute, because we did have a Facebook question from Brandy wondering your opinion on, well, who to call to locate somebody to clean out gutters and downspouts, for one thing. What kind of person would you call? Also, she asked about the gutter guards. There are, you know, really a lot of them on the market right now. Do they really work and are worth the price? I could just comment personally on the gutter guards.
Sure.
You installed those on our home, and I have a chance to see those. We didn't put them on the garage. We put them on the house, and, man, there's nothing in those gutters. I mean, it's great.
Well, they work.
Yeah.
Some of them work well. Some of them work okay. So even if you pick some brand that is not that great, it'll still give you several years of good service before it needs some sort of maintenance. The really cheap stuff, the screens that people buy and stick in the gutters, and they stick them up under the shingles, those aren't very good, because what happens is you get a heavy rain or you get a squirrel walking on it, and they'll dent, and then they allow stuff in, and then they become areas for plugging. But gutter guards, there's gutter sponge, there's gutter seal, there's all kinds of gutter stuff, and they are a good bet. With regard to who to call for cleaning your gutters, if you've got a one-story house, you could probably get away with a lot of, you know, any kind of a handyman person could deal with it. Sometimes companies that clean windows also do gutters. And sometimes people who install gutters have a division. If they are a larger company, that they'll come out and put your house on a maintenance program. I didn't get where Brandy lives, so I don't know if she lives.
I'm not sure either.
Yeah, if you live in a rural area, it might be a little trickier. Back in the day, we used to just hire teenagers to do it. I'm a little worried about it now, and I would never have them on a two-story building. But sometimes roofers will take care of it for you too, so you could try all those different routes.
I tell a story on myself. I was probably about 19 years old, and there was a farmer who wanted some work done on his barn roof.
Oh, good.
which was a steep roof.
And tall.
And tied a rope on me, and the rope went over.
Oh, Lord. He didn't tie it to the bumper of his truck, did he?
200-foot rope and over one side, and I was hanging over the other side of the barn with this rope.
Well, if anybody has a photo, send it in.
Oh, yeah, my goodness.
All the things you shouldn't do.
Oh, Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction, our guest today, talking about fall home maintenance and things to do this time of the year. Give us a call with your questions or comments. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. One of the things I forgot to do one year, this is many years back, which was to shut off the water for the outside.
For the hose bibs outside the wall.
Yeah, and I was reminded of it in the spring when I went outside and on a warm day, and the water was spewing out of the crack in
out of the crack in the pipe that goes
out
to
of the
yeah,
crack in the pipe. Yeah.
Well, that's a great thing to consider when you're finishing up the season. It's a little early now because we still have time to water and we're using our yards, but say around the end of October, middle of November, you'll want to shut off your hose bibs, shut off the water to them if there's an interior shutoff, so that you could keep the water pressure out of them. I tend to like to shut off the inside petcock, and then the hose bib itself, just leave it cracked open a little bit. Just remember, in the spring when you turn it on, you'll have water spewing out of it if you don't turn that off first. Yeah, I've done the same thing, Larry. I can't tell you. I think maybe six hose bibs I've had in the last 30 years in my house.
Oh, yeah. Well, Dan in River Falls has a question for you, so let's go there. Dan, hi, thanks.
Hi. I've got a sidewalk by the garage that is sloped towards the garage, mm-hmm. not the basement. I'm wondering if I need to, I think it's called mud jacking or something, to raise that, or if it's not against the basement, am I okay with just, I do caulk every fall pretty much, but I end up having to do it every fall because it wears away.
Yeah, that's a good question, Dan. So it doesn't lean against, it doesn't lean towards the house. It's out of level towards the garage. So water will head towards the garage. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, but the garage is attached to it, so it's
towards
the garage, but there's nothing below the slab of cement in the garage.
Well, you've had this for a while. What sort of history do you have? Have you had water going into the garage because of this, or is the water...
No, when I caulk it, I just have... When I get snow, it melts, and it just puddles up against the side of the garage, and then, of course, it freezes and thaws if I don't get to it right away.
Mm-hmm. And when it leans up against the garage, is it leaning against the siding or the concrete?
Concrete.
So, you're probably okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, just keep an eye on it over the years and see if you start getting water into your garage or if it starts creeping up the siding, you could start causing damage to your siding. Not having a picture, I'm drawing a picture of what I think it looks like in my mind, and when it if this happens where it leans against the siding, then you could have problems.
Okay.
Okay. Then I was going to use some tar that I used to build up from the driveway to the garage. Can I use that instead of the caulk, or is the caulk a better product for this?
Tar. What do you mean by tar? Are you talking about plastic roofs?
Pothole filler.
Oh, I see. What kind of... Is a sidewalk concrete?
Yes.
And so you're thinking of pothole filler, which is a asphalt-based product.
Yeah, just putting it against the side of that and tapping it along that side. So I'm thinking it might hold longer than the caulk.
Well, have you tried a masonry caulk, it would be like a low viscous caulk for crack filling masonry.
Yeah.
You have tried.
Yeah, great. Yep.
They usually have a high adhesion and cohesion quality, so they usually stick pretty well. Has that not been your experience?
Well, it's better than not. I mean, it just comes apart a little bit, maybe an eighth of an inch at the most, but I still end up just doing it because.
Well, I found that usually works better than tar. You could try it.
Okay.
The trouble is, if it doesn't work, it's hard to clean up.
Yeah.
And hard to clean out of there. But yeah, you know, it's if it's not causing any damage in the to the house or the garage, I guess you can experiment with it and see what'll hold up. You know, asphalt and concrete expand and contract at different rates, so they might not be as compatible as some of the high adhesive caulks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Dan, for calling. Appreciate it. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison, our guest today. We're going to be talking with him right through till 12:30 today about fall home maintenance. And you may have a question for him, a particular repair you want to take care of. He may be able to help. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with general contractor Ken Adams about what should be on our fall home maintenance checklist, and pretty much all the lines are filled. So let's go back to the phones and to Joe in Milton. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Calling about drainage around a 100-and-some-year-old house with a stone foundation.
Yes.
We happen to have a backhoe coming next week, a small one, and I thought... we've been having some issues with drainage that maybe we could put some drain tile around it. And we're wondering, what do we need to do to do that correctly?
Well, that's a good question. When you have I take it it's a limestone foundation with limestone mortar or lime mortar, probably very thick.
No, it's not lime. It's very thick, but it's not limestone. It's granite stone.
Granite stone, okay.
That's been fitted together. It's probably 3.5 feet thick.
I wish John Freiberger was here. He joins us periodically, and this is his field, so he could go into more detail than I can.
Sure,
but here's
sure.
what
I know: we don't want to dig down too far because that dirt is holding that wall together.
Yeah, you know, it's if you're you want to be very careful. You're going to use heavy equipment. You use a backhoe to take it out, so you want to dig a little bit away from the building and then hand dig as you get closer. It's going to be virtually impossible to waterproof the outside of that, but a drain tile is a great idea if you can. Yeah. You've already got it contracted to dig around the entire foundation, put a drain tile in, and then put your dirt back in. Is that correct?
No, we've got a small backhoe coming for a couple other projects around the farm.
Oh, I see.
It's a small one with a 12-inch bucket.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, well, it's there, and let's put it to another use and try to get some of this water away from the house.
Now, how much water are you getting in, and are you getting it in every day, or is it just after storms, that sort of thing?
Just after storms.
Okay. So there's a good chance that some of the water that's coming in is coming in because the ground is sloping towards the house. We were just talking about this a call ago.
Yeah. It's probably more of an issue that the previous owner put a steel roof on the house, and there's no gutters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a problem. You'll want to do something to move the water away from the house, and a gutter system it's really important. One thing to keep in mind is these foundations that you have, they're sort of made to leak. They'll last for 500 years, but they will never be. You'll never have a bone dry basement, and that's okay as long as you know how to manage the water that's coming through.
Yeah. And they did that when they built the house. Let's just call the water that comes in the basement well managed.
Uh huh. So
but there's a couple corners where the valleys come together where there's a lot of water coming in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd say the first thing you want to do after you address your other issues with the backhoe that you've got coming is to get some estimates for some gutters on it and maybe some extra large downspouts in the areas that you have a lot of hydraulic
okay.
pressure.
All right. Are people successful at keeping gutters on steep steel roofs where you get a lot of ice coming off every year?
They are very successful. One of the things you want to make sure that you have are those, I can't remember what they're called, but they're these little points that are glued to the top of the roof that hold the snow back and keep it from just coming off in sheets. They're glued on the surface, or you can screw them through, but they're better glued on the surface, and they sort of slow down the melting process. And then there's special fasteners that are used for steel roofs. So you should be okay.
Okay. With
the proper installation. Right. Yeah. Okay. Good luck, Joe.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. They have Mike and Pestigo, by the way, just tuned in and heard us talking about gutter guards, looking for a good gutter guard that can handle long pine needles.
Pine needles are tricky, aren't they?
Yeah, they are tricky.
Yeah, pine needles are tricky because they're so small, and if they come in on the edge, they'll just stick right in there. I'll tell you, I had some success with this material called gutter sponge. Yeah, it's like basically a big green scrubby, except it's black, and it's made to fit into the gutter. Now, I did one on one side of my garage about 8 years ago, and it's still successful. I didn't want to put it in the people's houses until I knew for sure it had some. But, and we have some trees out there that, have lots of little stuff falls off them all different seasons. And it seems every time we have a heavy rain, it cleans itself out. So you get a lot of little debris sitting on top, but it all cleans itself out. That might be one possibility. Another one, I saw a gutter guard. I haven't used it, but I saw one that let's see how I could describe it. It looks like a series of ridges with very fine holes underneath each ridge. And so any material that hits the top is going to bounce off. It's going to be very hard for that material to find its way in the holes under the ridge. I don't know what the name of it is, but it slides under the shingles, locks into the gutter, and has, 2 or 3 ribs on top, it's also on an angle, so any material that lands on top, when you have water or wind blowing, it's going to blow it off the roof. So one of those might work for you.
Mm-hmm. Peggy in South Milwaukee, just on, still on gutter guards, since they installed them, they've been having problems with very large icicles forming, wondering how to remedy that. That's not a problem I've had.
No, that's an interesting problem. I'm wondering if there's something else going on, because typically these gutter guard the products, thanks, are usually they're usually made to keep dirt from falling into the gutter, and so dirt and debris from trees and such, but they don't really hold water in and of themselves. So I just wonder if you have an insulation issue or a ventilation issue in your roof.
Yeah.
If that's, I don't know what kind of insulation. Obviously, we can't talk. We can't have a conversation here because you're online. But you want to look at the insulation in your attic, and you want to look to see if there's ventilation above that insulation, keeping your roof cool so that you don't start developing ice dams in the winter, because ice dams are usually the cause of big icicles. That's about all I can tell you without having a conversation. So you may want to speak to a good quality insulator in your area.
I think that's good advice. Sarah in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Ken.
Hi.
I have a question that's not about gutters, actually. we have a 1930s home with original windows. And I've noticed, the windows are in pretty good shape, but I've noticed that after the winter months, it looks like there's a little bit of moisture that's sort of damaging the joints on the sashes,
mm-hmm.
like where the window was, I guess, put together.
Sure.
And I don't know, if it's just the temperature fluctuations or what's causing it exactly, but it's definitely during the winter months. No water gets in there or anything. And I'm just wondering if there's something we can do in the winter to protect that or insulate it, keep those sashes from getting, from degrading, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sarah, you bring up a really good point, because this is a very common problem. And what it's basically the result of is moisture in your home condensing on the windows in the winter. You basically you have a dehumidifier. The way a dehumidifier works is it's a refrigerator coil. It pumps refrigerant through it, and it becomes very cold. And then moisture in the house loves to attract itself to cold places. It goes to this cold coil. It reaches the dew point, condenses, and falls into a bucket, and then you throw that out, or it drains into a floor drain. This is the same thing that's happening to your windows. Your windows are colder than any other part of the house, especially if you've insulated the walls since 1930s. And so when you have humidity in the house condensing on cold surfaces, it drips down, and then drips down into the wood on the sash and slowly degrades it. A couple things you could do. One would be to get a humidistat in your house, okay, to see what your humidity is like. Do you have good ventilation in the kitchen and the bathrooms? An exhaust fan? Yeah. So you're generating excess moisture. Do you have kids?
Yes.
So,
I've never noticed condensation on the windows, which is mm-hmm. why I was wondering, it's not obvious if that's what's causing it.
A lot of times it's just a little bit of beading right at the corners, right at the cold spots,
okay,
of the windows. And another thing you could do is every once in a while just wipe them off. So put it on your weekly list to just wipe it off. Another thing you can add to the list is make sure you got a good coat of finish on the inside, something that's water impermeable, a good water-based...
Okay.
Varnish or shellac might not work for you, but a varnish or a polyurethane would help. It's not going to alleviate the problem. It'll just help the symptoms from getting worse. So check the humidity. If you can, in the winter, we all like to cook. We like to cook pastas and soups and stews, and we you take showers and you just generate a lot of moisture, and it's really good to be able to control that somehow. Mm-hmm. And you may end up wanting to think about a hood vent in your kitchen, upgrading your bath vents, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yes, that's very helpful. Can I ask one more question?
Okay.
So we also noticed that some of the glazing in our windows is, it's falling off in chunks, which is probably common in older windows. Mm-hmm. Do you know who we could call for that type of service, or who does window glazing on older windows these days?
Sure, there are several companies that do it. I don't know where you're located.
La Crosse.
Oh, La Crosse, yeah.
La Crosse.
Okay. I don't know any window companies in La Crosse, but most companies that do window installation or window repair work will also do this. Here in town, we have companies like, I'm off the top of my head, Martin Glass on the east side. You can call up a company that sells glass, and they usually have an arm of their business that'll come out and repair your sashes for you on the spot. Sometimes you have to take them in to have them repaired, but they can help you with that. So in La Crosse, okay. I'd look up windows, window repair. Nobody uses a phone book anymore, but yeah. You look it up online in your local area, and I'm sure you'd be able to find something.
Yeah.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh, Martin Glass, and I'm right in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
I've had many a short trip over there and getting a window fixed or what have you, and they always get it done quickly, and
yeah.
Nice to have something like that in your neighborhood.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have Bonnie in Blue Mounds next. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You were talking about shutting off your faucets, your outdoor faucets, like in October, November, and I have never shut my outdoor faucet off, and it's about the addition on where it is about 8 years old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of dripping when I use my hose. I don't have leaking like through the winter. Nothing comes out of it. But is that possibly the reason that I have
probably not
problems? Water is always dripping around the no matter what hose I use.
Mm-hmm.
I put a bucket under the faucet just because I don't want to waste all that water, and then I use that for watering. But could that be something that is damaged inside, called the bib that I heard you mentioned?
Yeah, hose bib. Yeah. Well, Larry's right. It might not be that problem, but it also could be caused by freeze thaw. And mm-hmm. What happens over time? You've got this little shutoff inside that's got gaskets. So it has these little gaskets, and for whatever reason, either from turning them on and off repeatedly, or sometimes they freeze in the winter, and then they get brittle, and they start to crack, and the seals aren't as good. These can usually be fixed. You have to shut the water off to that unit. The unit is unscrewed. It comes out, and there are gaskets that you can replace, and sometimes you can get a gasket kit for them. All of the good quality ones can be repaired if that's just the problem, and whatever the cause, either, like I say, either freeze thaw or just age and brittleness.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's an inexpensive one, it might not be able to be repaired. But if you do replace it with one that's got they're really long, and it's got the shutoff inside all the way at the end, so when you attach this to the wall, the shutoff is way inside the house, so it's much less likely to freeze because the heat of the house will keep it from freezing.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yeah. And yeah. If I already have that long replacement shutoff.
Yeah. Well, maybe all you need to do is replace the gaskets.
Maybe. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You know.
It's amazing how.
Yeah.
How that'll solve the problem so often.
Do you have a shutoff inside between somewhere in the water line to that?
Mm-hmm.
Because you could shut it off there and give it a shot yourself. Just there's a screw or bolt on the end of it. You put a crescent wrench on it and turn it off and take a look at it. If you can't figure it out yourself, take it to a hardware store. Think how good you'll feel when you get it fixed. And if you can't fixed, you have to hire a plumber anyway. You know, nothing lost.
Okay.
All right, good luck. Thanks, Bonnie. for calling. You can join in, too, as we talk with Ken Adams today of Adams Design Construction in Madison about what kind of fall home maintenance, the checklist. You may have some questions about what, something going on in your home. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. 1-800-642-1234. You know, we were talking about those roof, those snow holders on a roof.
Mm-hmm.
Tad called in and said, those are called snow jacks.
Thanks, Tad. Appreciate it.
We got the right name. We had a question, Facebook question from, let's see who we got here. We've got a few. Let me just make sure I get the right one here. Oh, my goodness me. Here we go. Daniel, planning to replace the concrete apron in front of his garage to accompany all the things that we're talking about here. The trouble is he's been having is that the entrance door binds up in winter weather due to frost heave. While I have it open, can I dig down some distance and bury foam insulation to stabilize the door jam footing? If so, how deep would I have to go, or how thick of the foam would I have to have?
Hmm. Well, not knowing whether or not the rest of the garage is on a frost wall, that could either alleviate the problem or make it worse. If the garage is on a frost wall and just this little area here has been cut down and to a point that it's not, not allowing or is allowing frost underneath it, then maybe that would work. I just can't give you a clear answer without getting a visual on it. If you want to send a photo, yeah, that might help.
Send it to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We can take a look at it and hopefully come up with something for you. We had a good comment from a Facebook comment from Gigi, who just heard mention of dehumidifiers we were talking about and wanted us to mention there's an important recall. And she's got a link with the title, Over 2 Million Dehumidifiers Recalled, Reports of Fire. So if you've got a dehumidifier, you might want to take a look at it. And let's go online to my Facebook page. You can see she's got the list of the dehumidifiers that are under recall. So I'm going to have to take a look, too.
Yeah, thanks, Gigi.
Yeah, thank you very much. Tom in Lake Namagamon, it is your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Say, the woman that was just on who had a leaky faucet, if it doesn't leak when she's not using it, I have those long faucets also, but I also have an anti-siphon check valve on the top that has a little O-ring in it. And every spring, that O-ring is bad, and I have to replace it. And it's mine has got a little plastic octagonal cap on it, just outside of the faucet that you can see. It's mounted right on the faucet. And if you pull that off, there's a little check valve in there, and the check valve has an O-ring on it. And that O-ring goes bad, and then your faucet leaks whenever you're using it. So that might be her problem. It might not be the gasket way inside on her faucet. It might be if she has an anti-siphon valve.
Yeah, good point.
That's a very good point. Thanks, Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah, appreciate it. So something else to check. And she was not the only person, I'm sure, who's has that kind of problem. Lots of people have had that problem. So we had a question from Reva. What does one use to fill a gap between an exterior house wall, which is cultured stone, and the ground or cement sidewalk? So fill a gap. You got a gap between the house and the sidewalk.
Okay. Well, earlier we were talking about a masonry crack filler. It's a low viscous caulk that you can ooze into a crack. If you can visualize just a crack in the sidewalk, and you caulk inside here, and the material oozes into the crack, and then when it seals very well. Quite often, something like this would work. If it's a large gap, it might be a little bit different situation. But in small gaps, you can usually put this caulk in there, this masonry repair caulk. You could also use, they have a modern-day version of oakum. It's a foam backer, and you can put that behind the crack and then fill in around it. You might need something that's a little thicker to fill that to stay in place. One of the things about using this low viscous stuff, this it's really liquidy, and if you put too much into a crack, it'll ooze all over the place and just get really unsightly. Oh. So you want to try it in an out of the way place first until you get your sea legs, so to speak, and kind of understand the material. So I hope that helps.
John in Milwaukee, hello.
Hi, Larry. Yeah, I wanted to ask Ken. My house is due for a little painting update, but I was also thinking of getting siding. And if I'm getting the siding, is it necessary to paint first?
I'm not sure what you mean. Are you saying if you've got siding, you want to paint the existing, or do you? I mean, you want to paint?
Oh no! Right now, there's no siding on the house. It's due for a paint job. But I was wondering if I'm going to get the house sided anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Is it really necessary to paint it? Would that be advisable to go ahead and also take care of painting it too?
Well,
or add a protection, or is that not necessary?
So your house has no siding on it now?
No.
And you want to side it, but you're wondering if you should paint the siding?
Or paint?
No, the house, if I didn't get it sided, it needs to be painted.
I see. So you.
I'm thinking of getting siding.
Okay, so you're...
So, if I'm going to get the siding anyway, can I skip the painting?
Yes, I would think. Wouldn't you?
Well, you know, if you don't have to, are you going to tear off the old stuff to put new siding on?
I don't think there's no siding on it at all. So it's just boards.
No, you don't have to paint the boards, but there's substrate material that you'll want to put on. You want to put on a water barrier that allows vapor through, but won't allow water through, like Tyvek or 15-pound or 30-pound felt, and then you can put your siding over the top of it. But there are siding manufacturers usually have very good quality instructions on how to install siding and how to prepare the walls below it. And so you could check with the manufacturer's website, whatever type of siding you're looking at, and you should probably be able to get all the information that you could use.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
thank you.
Thanks
a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And we'll get to Mike in Sycamore, Illinois in just a minute. Just a reminder, though, we're visiting today with Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller with my guest today, Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison, here to help you with your home needs. We have a fall home maintenance checklist. We've been going through that. We've also been taking calls. You may have a question. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Post on my Facebook page. If you have a question, you can post there. Facebook page is The Larry Mueller Show. So you can go there or email us at talk@wpr.org. And now let's go to Mike in Sycamore, Illinois. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just wanting to check. My wife and I installed a wood-burning fireplace in the home here approximately 3 years ago. And we were just wondering, you know, how often we should have that cleaned out as far as the flue and the chimney. Mm-hmm. You know, we put this in thinking it would be kind of a romantic thing and maybe once or twice a week burning wood. And you know, my wife loves it, and so now we own a pickup and a chainsaw, and we're burning 4 or 5 truckloads of wood, you know, a year. So anyway, but it's typically hickory and oak that we're burning.
So you're burning it, you're using it quite a bit. It's a steel flue, is it?
It is, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And double wall?
Yeah, double wall, sure. There's different manufacturers' recommendations on those. Some are 1 year, some are 3 years. I always err on the side of caution. So I would have it looked at least now. I mean, you've had it for how many years? 8?
Between three years maybe on it.
Yeah, you're probably on borrowed time. I'd have it cleaned, checked, and then you could ask the chimney sweep. What based on the kind of usage you're doing, what you should expect to how often you should expect to do it. Does that make sense?
Oh, it sure does. It sure does. Well, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, so next time you call in, you can call yourself Grizzly Adams.
You can spend thousands and thousands of dollars to save a couple bucks on the heating.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot of it is fun having a wood fireplace. It's just, it is a lot of work, though.
Yes, it is. Oh, man. Bill in Evansville. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes. I had a question about a lot of ice buildup in gutters during the winter. I've got one section of gutter that is not, it's not got very much drop, and it just turns to solid ice. Is heat tape or something like that a good thing to use? And is there certain types that are better, and is there dangers?
Well, heat tape's a really good idea, Bill. But let's back up and find out what's causing that. Are you checking the downspouts? Are they clear? If they are clear, are the gutters clean? And if they aren't, then you want to open those up very well. And also you want to see if the ice is forming on the roof, if you've got ice damming behind the gutters.
There is some ice damming above the gutter on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And the gutters are as clean as I can get them, but
sure.
Due to a strange way that the gutters are run, I do have some problem with ice building up in other sections of the gutters also.
I see. Yeah, and that's not unusual for houses to be a little cut up and have part of them be hard to get to.
Right.
There's a couple things that you can do. First of all, the heat tape will work very well at keeping the water moving through the gutters. You'd want them run through the gutters and down the downspouts, and that way water won't freeze in the downspouts and you know, create a pool of ice in the gutter and around the gutter. But also you'll want to take a look and see why there's ice damming forming on your roof. If you've got access to the attic space, maybe you can get a visual on that and see if there is any insulation on top of the wall. And if there is, if there isn't, that could be changed. Sounds like you have someone in the background giving you advice there.
Kind of a dragon dog. Just a second. Let me step.
Dragon dog. Okay. I have one too. He attacks every situation. Like, I want some answers and I want them now. But anyway, so if you can't see it, you may want to get an insulator over there. Or an insulation.
I'm outside right where it is now. And
okay.
It's a section of roof that goes between the garage and the house.
Okay. Is it over a heated space or an unheated space?
No, that's an unheated space. It's like a walkway between the garage and the house. And
sure.
That's where the gutter is a problem and where some ice damming on the roof also.
Then it's probably the transition between the house and the breezeway. It's probably right at that transition is where the issue is, because the reason ice dams form is because heat is escaping someplace, melting snow usually in a roof above it, and that melted snow rolls downhill downhill a little bit, gets to a cold place and freezes, yeah. And then you get a big dam developing with a swimming pool above that basically, and it wouldn't necessarily happen over a breezeway if it's not heated, but it could happen right where the breezeway and the house meet. So that would be the area I would have.
Where it is, yeah.
Yeah. So you look at that, and then think of heat tape as something that will help alleviate the symptoms but not resolve the problem.
Okay. Well, I can probably live with that. Is there types of heat tape that are better or different or not as good?
Well, the ones that are the best are the ones that you have to do the least amount of maintenance to. And I would say that if you can find one that, first of all, you want thermostatic control so that it will shut itself off. If you've got one that you can place on its own circuit so that you don't have to really think about it, plug it in and, you know, have extension cords, that's always good. And I would say look at their manufacturer's warranty. I can't give you a manufacturer right now that I would recommend, but, you know, there's, I think, at least four or five of them out there that should help you out.
Good enough.
Okay, and the tape itself goes into the gutter or, like,
the
water's actually on it? And that's okay?
Yeah, you could. They're made to be waterproof, so you could put them in the gutter. Some people put them in a a wave pattern up the roof and down into the gutter, up the roof, down into the gutter, and repeat that throughout, and that keeps snow from developing on the roof edge. And that may be something that you'd something you do at your transition to the breezeway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's a lot of, I'm sorry, Larry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
There's a lot of secondary information on this online, and one good source would be the Journal of Light Construction. I think Fine Home Building often has articles, so you could probably pull out a few articles on this stuff and get more information than we could possibly talk about here.
Yeah.
So thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. And Ardell in Green Bay. Hi. Ardell, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello. Hi.
Yes, hi. What can we do for you?
Okay, we have a 40-year-old ranch home with an attached garage. My problem is with water collecting in the garage, like after I come in, drive in after a rainstorm or snow is packed onto the car and it falls off and melts, and it puddles quite badly, like by the entrance door and by the garage door itself.
Yeah.
My question is there any way of putting a drain in a pre-existing floor in the garage? And what type of contractor would I get to do something that could help me? I'm not even sure if something like that can be done. And the salt cakes, and dries and cakes, and it's I'm just tired of dealing with it. And sometimes, the water, it could be maybe a half an inch to an inch, so you have to walk through the entrance door. And it must be a low spot there.
Yeah, exactly right.
We don't have a drain in the garage floor now.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it's attached to the house, but, it's like most ranch homes that, were built during that time. 1972 is when it was built.
Well, probably what happened is that the garage floor, when it was poured, was not poured properly. What the whole idea of having the garage floor is all to slope towards the front door, so any ice and snow that falls off your car will drain out to the outside.
There's just a little bit of a threshold by the entrance door, so it just
holds it then.
Yeah, it traps it. It can't get out. So, and then, of course, it erodes the threshold, and the screws that screwed in are all rusted. And I'm just tired of dealing with it. And I thought, is there any way of putting a drain in the floor at this time? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, the engineering term for that is it's really yucky. And so, here's what you can do. There's a couple ways to do this. One is, and neither of them are cheap, but one's a little less expensive than the other. You could put a French drain in it, which is to cut a hole in the floor, dig a big hole. You put a perforated drum down in there that has a drain attachment to the top, and then you fill back in around it and re-pour it. Then water will pour into that and slowly leach out into the ground below. That's one way to do it. It's not perfect solution, especially since it's in a garage and it may be heated from time to time and it may freeze, and it might not help you out, especially if the low spot is in another area or if you have more than one low spot. Yeah.
No, I just have that one low spot.
The other thing you could do is you could either re-pour the garage floor, or if it's in really good shape, you might be able to veneer the top, and you could talk to some concrete contractors. You're in Green Bay, so I'm sure there's several good contractors in Green Bay that can help you with this. They may, if the floor, like I say, is in good shape, they may be able to veneer it. Another solution is it may be heaving slightly and require a little bit of mud jacking, which is to drill a small hole and pump sand water solution in and adjust the height of it. So you've got three different ways to look at it. The best thing to do is call a couple of people and talk to them. Call a couple of good concrete contractors that specialize in flat work, and ask them what their opinions are. They should be able to help you out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so a concrete contractor would be the person I would call.
That would be the place to start.
Yeah. Okay, real good. Thank you very much, Ken.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for calling. And Rosine and Mequon, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for accepting my call. Here's my question. We have a 30 or 38 years old house. It hasn't been changed on the fire. That the outside faucet and the inside leads to the basement. We have on three sides of the house, it all leaks in all seasons, and either including when it's turned off.
Okay,
so the hose bib leaks for you all the way around.
All the way around.
Oh, that's terrible. If you had a plumber look at the plumbing.
Yeah, we have not. My husband was thinking of plumbing, but he wanted me to find a plumbing who had certification, and I don't know where to look for a good one.
Oh, that's a good question about certification. All plumbers in the state of Wisconsin are required to be licensed. So if you call a plumber up, you just ask to see their license. That's all you have to do. Just have them take a look at the plumbing, look at the hose bib, the faucet, and he should be able to help you out. There's a lot of really good plumbers in the state of Wisconsin, and like I say, they're all required to be certified, so you should be okay. I wouldn't go to a handyman to save some money. I would spend the money on a plumber.
Yeah, and it could well be just the same problem in all three of the areas.
Yeah, that's very likely.
And maybe a fairly inexpensive fix, but you want the right person to work on it. Thank you very much, Rosine, for calling, and good luck to you. Talking today with Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison. You may have a question for him as we talk home maintenance and fall checklists. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page, post there at The Larry Mueller Show. Back right after the news. Well, it can certainly be stressful when something needs to be done and fixed at home and you don't have the time or maybe the money to take care of it. The first step is zeroing in on the problem, the specific problem, and figuring out what needs to be done. And that's true whether it's a do-it-yourself project or maybe time to call in the pros. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison here to help us take better care of our homes, so you and I can save some time, some money, and some worry. And Ken, great to have you with us once again.
Yes, having a good time.
Having a great time today,
yes.
Talking with him. And you can join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Jim in Presque Isle has a question for you, Ken. Let's go there. Jim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, good afternoon, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question on insulating basement walls. Our home is about 2 years old, two heating seasons, and it's probably a little bit older than that, half year older than that. But I have a question about vapor barriers. I hear conflicting reports on this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put just rolled insulation up. The walls are studded up, and I'm going to put rolled insulation up. And the question is, should I put a vapor barrier over the top of that or not?
Well, the current building code in the state of Wisconsin says no, that you're not supposed to put a vapor barrier up. So that's what I would follow. I would follow their guidelines.
Okay. Would I have? Is there any chance I would have any a problem with mold or anything because of that?
Well, you say your foundation is 2 years old now?
Yes.
Most of the problems that people have with foundations that are young like that is that moisture in the foundation is basically leaching back into the wall from the outside in if the basement's not heated. But I don't think that that's going to be an issue for you. Your house has been, the concrete's been curing for 2 years now. That's pretty good. I think most of the moisture is going to be out of the concrete itself.
Okay.
And the kind of moisture that you're going to generate in the basement is not going to, unless you were running an open shower in there or something, it shouldn't be a big problem for you. Are you going to put drywall over the top? How are you going to finish the walls?
Yes.
A couple things that you want to consider there is, first of all, if you are uncomfortable with the idea, you could paint the walls with a vapor barrier paint, which is pretty much... Many latex paints are vapor barriers in and of themselves, but you can buy a primer that is special, is a special vapor barrier primer. You could also make sure the drywall doesn't touch the floor.
Okay.
So, because if you get any moisture at all on the floor, the gypsum will just suck it right up, and you'll end up replacing the bottom 2 feet of your drywall every time you get a little leak in the basement. So if you keep it up off the floor, say, even an inch and a half, and then cover that up with some baseboard, you should be fine with that.
Good enough. Very good. I don't think I'll have any problems because it's very dry down there, and I do have some in-floor heat that would take up a lot of the moisture.
Uh-huh.
It's just in the summertime, and I was just thinking about the moisture gathering. But I think that you're saying is what I was planning to do. I just wanted a little reassurance because it's not one of the things you want to redo after you put the...
No, it's not any fun. So. And make sure, have you built the studs yet?
Yes.
Okay. Everything
and
that's
I have
touched...
them an inch away from the, or three-quarters of an inch probably away from the cement as it is.
So that's good. Another thing you want to consider is that anything that's touching the concrete should be treated or protected, separated from the concrete somehow.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Good luck.
And that's no problem. All right. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks.
Very good.
Thanks a lot for calling. Somebody was asking me the other day about energy audits, and that's something we should bring up because I know you're a big fan of energy audits.
I am, yeah. So an energy audit there's a variety of them. Some of them done by the utility companies are fairly cursory, and they're helpful, but they're not as in-depth as some of the other ones. There's focus on energy audits that are the ones that I recommend. What happens is your auditor will come in, he or she will look at all your ventilation. They'll put the house under pressure, under negative pressure, and they'll use an infrared camera and see anywhere there's air infiltration, cold spots in the walls. They can tell you if the insulator missed a spot when they insulated back in 1979, which is not uncommon. And then they can give you a report along with several recommendations. Larry, I think you've had this done too, haven't you? And
great. It was wonderful.
It's good information, and it's something that can be used to help plan out how you're going to improve the energy efficiency of your home. And it's also good for resale because if you reach a certain level of improvement, you can show that to a potential buyer, and that could be helpful to push a sale across or maybe get that extra couple hundred bucks for the house.
Yeah, and our house, the current house, is an Energy Star home. So
And so the other thing is if you're going to do some remodeling, you could most energy auditors will offer a service where they'll do an energy audit at the beginning and then towards the end of the project after all of the energy work is done. And if you achieve a certain level of improvement, they might help you get some. There are a few tax credits and some energy attaboys that you could get for making improvements. But also they will help you find where your contractor may have missed something. We're all human. Everybody makes a mistake, so they're another set of eyes on the building.
Becky in Oshkosh, thank you very much for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about my bathroom toilet, and it leaks. We had a plumber, come out a while back who noticed that the previous owners had put a second subfloor above the existing, so now the flange, is that the right term?
Yes, that's it.
Sits below the current subfloor. But additionally, when they put the new subfloor on, they cut the hole too wide, and so the toilet doesn't bolt to the floor, and so it wiggles a little bit, and we've had to replace wax rings a couple of times because the second floor bathroom leaks.
Yeah, that's terrible.
The ceiling of the first floor.
Oh, yuck.
So I'm just wondering, how do you propose we fix this? We opened up the first floor ceiling and thought we could put some supports from the underneath, but that just doesn't, it's too tight of a space. It's very hard to get in there. So is there anything we could do from the bathroom level, from, right around the toilet? Any way we could secure that to the subfloor?
Well, I wish I had a good solution for you, but I don't. If your screws aren't going into either the flange on the the around the wax ring or going into plywood, you're going to have to do something. If you can't go from underneath, I'm surprised you couldn't get to it from underneath. Is it just too close to the joists? Is that it? Or
I think so.
Just in a real odd.
Mm-hmm. And it's a very old house. There seems to be a lot of, little copper pipes and things like that around the area, maybe coming from the sink or from the shower and stuff. And it's just
like spaghetti.
We can look at it again. It does seem a little tight. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah. If you can get into it from the bottom, that's the easiest thing. Cause otherwise you're causing some damage to the floor that you just spent money on. So is it a tile floor or is it vinyl?
It's a vinyl floor. And, It was like that when we bought the house. So I guess, we're going to be in it for a while, so we could invest a little bit in fixing it. We were thinking about taking out a section of the subfloor, laying new subfloor with an appropriately sized hole.
That would be the ticket. That would be the thing to do. Yeah, it's unfortunate, but you've got two problems. You've got you have to use an extension for your wax ring. Because the flange is at the lower level, you can have that fixed, and then you'll also be able to tighten down the toilet. By the way, just a little aside, most manufacturers of plumbing of toilets recommend that you change your wax ring every year. Did you know that?
we're sort of on that path anyway.
I don't think I've changed. I changed mine once in 10 years, and it's because it leaked. So I should practice what I preach anyway. So good luck. I think you're on the right track, really.
Okay. We'll do that then. Thanks much.
Yeah, thanks, Maggie.
Bye-bye.
Mary in Oconomowoc. Hi.
Hello. Very helpful show.
Thank you. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. I wanted to address the lady who had the water in her garage right by her door.
Yeah.
First of all, I know in some places you can't have a floor drain. It's against code. I don't know if that's the same kind of drain you were talking about. But I had an issue like this, and what I did was I went online and I looked for one of these mats that you put under your car.
Mm-hmm.
And mine has little ridges around it, so it catches all that slush and water in the wintertime. And then I either just shut back that water up and dump it outside, or I take one of the ridge things off the end and I just take a large broom and sweep it out. So that would be a lot cheaper than cutting up her garage floor or something like that.
Well, that's true. It doesn't solve the problem. It just creates, it creates a maintenance issue, and you could certainly do it that way. It's, I applaud you for having the tenacity to do it all the time because.
Like this last winter, I didn't have to do it that often.
Right.
You can let quite a bit collect before you actually have to vacuum it up or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
But the one I got is called Park Smart Clean Park. So if she wants to go online,
Park
she can check them out.
Smart Clean Park.
Park. Smart Clean Park.
All right.
Park Smart Clean Park. It sort of rolls off the tongue.
Right.
Thanks, Mary.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. All right. I hope she was still listening. Mark in Waukesha. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I was thinking about putting an egress window in my basement, and I was wondering about the code regarding that. If you put an egress window in the basement, does that make your basement a living space at that point, or is there other requirements?
Well, it makes it habitable. So if you have a room down there, and
we do have a rec room in there.
Okay. And then say you put in a legal-sized egress window, that makes it eligible to become a bedroom, so you could actually sleep down there.
Okay.
So that's something to consider. Frankly, it's always good to have egress from any room, and a basement.
Right.
You don't want to be locked in the basement. If you ever had a fire upstairs, it'd be great to have secondary access. But also, you get more light, and it's a great place for the teenagers to sneak in and out of when you're upstairs.
Yeah. How is it sized? Is it based on the square footage of the room, or?
Well, there's a lighting restriction for a lighting code for bedrooms. I think I want to say 8% of the floor space has to be devoted to glass. There's some ways around that, I believe, but the the more important thing is egress, and that I believe the way the code reads is that you have to have an unobstructed 20-inch wide by 24-inch tall or 24-inch tall by 20-inch wide opening. So you need a window that when it's open, it will be that size or larger. And
okay.
And then it also has a restriction. I want to say 44 inches off the finished floor is the maximum it could be. And then if it's down below grade, you have to have, if it's more than, I think, 2 feet below grade, you have to have some steps to be able to
right.
climb out.
Right.
So there's you can go to the state website and look up the Uniform Dwelling Code, and there'll be specific language on there. You can read it. It's very dry, but it does the job.
Mm-hmm. I was kind of thinking in terms of this rec room that we have, if we put a egress window in and we decide to sell the house, is that considered square footage that's part of the square footage of the
house? Yeah.
It may be. It depends. Is your rec room finished? Is it is it just a rustic basement that with, you know?
No, it's drywalled, carpeted.
Yeah, it would certainly add to the value of your home.
Okay.
Not being a realtor, I couldn't tell you how it would add to the value of your home. I couldn't quantify it, but... Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Mark. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Jeanette in Wisconsin Rapids wanted you to comment about window well covers, having them versus not having them. So window well covers.
Well, that's a good question. Window wells, windows that are below grade, and you have the ground around it, you need to keep the dirt from being in front of the window, so they use a well that's like a half moon, roughly, that holds the dirt from the window. And what happens quite often is, as you can imagine, when it rains, water can collect in that well and leak into your window. So if it's done properly, there's usually a great deal of porous material at the bottom of that well, and water that goes in there can roll away from the building and leach back into the soil slowly over time, and thus alleviating any problem for a leak. However, a lot of them aren't put in correctly, or over the years they've been modified improperly, and so whenever you get rain or you get enough rain, it leaks. So people put window well covers over the top of them. They're usually just a clear polyethylene, little plastic material that sets over the top, and that can be effective. So it'll help keep it clean. It might keep it from leaking. It might not necessarily keep it from leaking, because if you get a driving rain that can fall behind the place that is attached to the house, you could get some water in it. But they do the job usually.
Mm-hmm. And they will keep toads. Or
toads,
snakes, or little frogs, or other mice, or whatever else that falls into those and then can't get out.
Oh, that's a very good point.
I've had experience. Have you,
it sounds empirical.
Previous house.
Toads, yes.
You'd had to kind of go out and check pretty often, otherwise you're going to have dead, stinky
animals. Oh, poor toads, yeah.
There you go. Chris in Wauwatosa, hello.
Hi there. I'm still grieving the toads here. But... Hey, I want to thank you guys for this show. It's terrific.
Thanks.
Thank you.
My question is with regards to something that's happening on my ceiling in the main living room on the it's a one level ranch, and it seems to be, you know, I'm not sure, it could be smoke residual or it could be mold, I'm not sure, but it's just in the edges where the wall meets the ceiling, all the way around that room.
And what does it look like?
It looks dark, it looks like it could be smoke more than mold, but I'm not sure where, unless it's from having BLTs one too many times, but when you wipe it, it kind of smears, cleans, doesn't clean. I'm not quite sure what it is, and I'd like to paint, and I want to be sure I'm prepping and cleaning that appropriately.
Wow, that's a very interesting problem, and it happens all around the room?
Yeah, not in, just on the edges, and not in the, you know, the main portion of that room on the ceiling is just fine.
And is this room, how many outside walls are in this room?
Two.
So, but it's happening on the interior walls as well?
Yeah, only on the interior. Well, yeah, I see what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Not on the walls, just on the ceiling.
Just on the ceiling, okay.
Right.
That I haven't a clue. I'm really sorry I can't help you, but I can tell you that since you're planning on painting, you may want to carefully take a Stanley knife, a little utility knife, and carefully cut out a little bit of this, put it in a plastic bag.
Okay.
And if you can actually get two pieces, you could take one to your local paint store, and maybe if they can't identify what the problem is, then take the other piece and send it off to a lab that can analyze it. So I would think, I don't know if you would send it to the, where do you think, Larry? The State Department of Hygiene maybe? Or
that's a possibility. I'd at least go online to the State Laboratory of Hygiene and look and see their services, what they offer.
Yeah, they might be able to tell you what it is. You know, chances are it could be a mold if it is. I don't know what kind of insulation you have above your ceiling.
Good insulation. I had that energy assessment and followed through with getting that taken care of.
Uh-huh. So
appeared after that. So.
Well, I hope this helps. And because you're going to be painting it anyway, cutting out a little piece, even, I guess in a pinch, maybe you could wipe some of it off and put that the rag that you wipe it with in a baggie and see if you can get that analyzed.
That's a good idea, and I just want to mention, I know the UW system helps with identifying the entomology department. They help with identifying, I had box elder bugs on the outside of my house, and I didn't know what they were, so maybe there's a department in the UW system that can help with this too, but I'll check the state as well.
All right.
Thank you very, very much.
Yes, good luck, Chris.
Thanks very much for calling. I appreciate your call. We had a caller, Pat, suggested a solution for the toilet problem, the wobbly toilet. There's a clamp that goes inside the waste pipe and can secure the toilet. It's available at large plumbing supply places, Pat says.
I'm not sure if that would work when the flange is set low, so
yeah,
it may or may not.
Problem.
Yeah, that may or may not work for you, but it's a good idea. It's a good thought.
Well, on that thought, we have to conclude. Boy, the time flew by.
It really did. It's so great to be here. What great listeners you have.
We have great
wonderful questions.
Yep, and thank you so much. And you'll be back in a month.
I will be back with John Freiberger.
We'll do it again.
All right.
Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction. Go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can get a link to his website, Adams Design Construction Limited. That's right there. And shows all of the various services that Ken works on and things that he and his company mates perform here in southern Wisconsin. Great to have you listening in. Tomorrow, Diana Alfuth of UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.